Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Kings chapter 15, verses 9 through 24. We will discuss the reign of King Asa of Judah. Our context is this. We have covered now, since Solomon died, the kings of Rehoboam in the south in Judah and Jeroboam in the north in Israel. We have covered in those chapters, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, we covered in 1 Kings 13 and 14. In 1 Kings 15, the first 8 verses in our last audio, we covered the reign of King Abijam of Judah. That was Rehoboam's son. He ruled from 913 to 911 BC. Now, Jeroboam ruled from 931 to 910, and we covered his rule in 1 Kings chapter 13 and 14. So, we have now covered in the south Rehoboam and Abijam, and in the north Jeroboam, all of whom were bad, idolatrous kings. And now in this audio, we're going to look at a good king who served the Lord and loved the Lord. His name was Asa. And as I said, or maybe I didn't say, but he ruled from 911 to 870 BC, 41 years. So we start now in 1 Kings 15, 9 through 15. In the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asa became king of Judah, and he reigned in Jerusalem 41 years. His grandmother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. He expelled the male shrine prostitutes from the land and got rid of all the idols his fathers had made. He even deposed his grandmother Maacah from her position as queen mother because she had made a repulsive Asherah pole. Asa cut the pole down and burned it in the Kidron Valley. Although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. He brought into the temple of the Lord the silver and gold and the articles that he and his father had dedicated. Now verse 9 says, in the 20th year Jeroboam became king of Israel. Jeroboam started his reign in 931. He ruled for 20 years. That brings him down to 911 BC. 931 is a good date to remember because that's when the divided kingdom between Rehoboam in the south and Jeroboam in the north got started. 931, key date. So Asa takes over from his father in 911 BC, and he rules for 41 years down to 870 BC. His grandmother's name was Maacah, daughter of Abishalom. Abishalom is just another word for Absalom. So Absalom, that's David's famous son that did the rebellion, got his head caught up in a tree and got killed. His daughter was Maacah. Maacah married Rehoboam. Maacah and Rehoboam gave birth to Abijam, and Abijam was the father of Asa. And so Maacah is Asa's grandmother. Now John Gill claims that Maacah, the grandmother, brought up her grandson Asa. I don't know how he knows that. But he says this, quote, she brought him up, and this is observed to his commendation, that though he was educated by an idolatrous woman, yet was not corrupted by her as Asa's father Abijam was. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord as his father David had done, verse 11 tells us, and of course that's referring to the practice of idolatry. David did not do idolatry. This is not talking about his murder and adultery with Bathsheba. Verse 12, Asa expelled the male shrine or the male cult prostitutes from the land. People feel like they had to have homosexual sex with a priest so they could get close to God, which is pretty perverted, obviously. Now, these male cult prostitutes had come there in the time of Asa's grandfather, Rehoboam, 1 Kings 14:24. There were even male cult prostitutes in the land. Asa got rid of them. He also got rid of all the idols his fathers had made in verse 12. Who were his fathers? Well, that would be Solomon, Rehoboam, and Abijam. Let's take a quick walk through the history of Israeli or Israelite idolatry, starting with Solomon, 1 Kings 11:7. At that time, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, and for Milcom, that's Molech, the detestable idol of the Ammonites, on the hill across from Jerusalem. It's probably the Mount of Olives for Solomon. Now Rehoboam, in 1 Kings 14:23, we read this concerning him. They, this is Judah under King Rehoboam, they also built for themselves high places, sacred pillars, and Asherah poles on every high hill and under every green tree. An Asherah pole was a wooden pole to celebrate the Canaanite fertility goddess Astarte, Baal's wife or consort. Well, Rehoboam's not finished with idolatry. His son Abijam, Asa's father, committed idolatry also. We read in 1 Kings 15:3, Abijam walked in all the sins his father before him, that would be Rehoboam, had committed. And he was not completely devoted to the Lord his God as his ancestor David had been. Little understatement there. So Asa came from a long line of family idolaters, and he rejected them all. Good for him. Verse 13, it says that Asa even deposed his grandmother Maaka from her position as queen mother. Actually, it should be, if there was such a thing as a queen grandmother, because Maaka was the wife of Rehoboam, Asa's grandfather. Asa's father was Abijam, and Abijam's father was Rehoboam. Well, Rehoboam and Abijam had both died, and Maaka had survived both her husband and her son, so she was really the queen grandmother. But, you know, a queen mother has a lot of clout in any monarchical society, and Asa didn't care. He booted grandma out. Why? Because she had made a repulsive Asherah pole. Repulsive. A pole to worship Astarte, the many-breasted Easter egg lady, the goddess of fertility, who was worshipped with painted eggs. Asa cut the pole down and burned it in the Kidron Valley. Why did he do that? Probably to keep people from taking the gold and silver from the idol. He just burnt the whole thing up out in the valley so nobody could use the gold and silver from it. Now we go to verse 14, and we read this. Although he did not remove the high places, Asa's heart was fully committed to the Lord all his life. He did not remove the high places here in 1 Kings 15:14. But if we go to a parallel passage in 2 Chronicles, we read this in 2 Chronicles 14:3. He, that's Asa, removed the pagan altars and the high places. He shattered their sacred pillars and chopped down their Asherah poles. So in Kings, he doesn't remove the high places, and in Chronicles, he does remove the high places. So how do we resolve that apparent conflict? Well, Ellicott does it this way. He says that Asa attempted but failed to complete his reforms. He says this, quote, "The craving for local and visible sanctuaries, natural at all times, and especially in generations which had been degraded by gross idolatry, proved too strong for even earnest reformers." The historian, writing under the light of later experience, dwells on this imperfection of religious reform again and again. So in other words, Ellicott, if I'm reading him correctly, is saying that Asa tried to get rid of the pagan altars as recorded in 2 Chronicles, but he didn't succeed as recorded in Kings. I don't think that's the best way to reconcile the problem. Here's the Methodist Benson commentator. He says this, Asa removed the pagan altars, the idolatrous altars in 2 Chronicles 14:3, but he did not remove the illegal Yahweh altars in 1 Corinthians 15. Now, to show you how that works, we go to 2 Chronicles 14:3. I'm going to read it again and emphasize a couple of words. He, that's Asa, removed the pagan altars. The pagan altars in high places. Not all the high places. But in 1 Kings 15:14, we read that Asa did not remove the high places. There's no pagan in front of high places. So basically what Asa did is he left the shrines that were placed by the Yahweh-worshipping Israelites, he left those shrines up. Now, he shouldn't have, because the people of Israel were supposed to go to the temple to do their worship. So he shouldn't have done it. So let's look at some options as to why. Well, before I do that, let me read you a quote from Clark backing up Benson's idea that Asa removed the pagan altars but did not remove the illegal Yahweh altars. Quote from Clark, "The high places which he did not remove were probably those where the true God alone was worshipped, for that there were such high places the preceding history amply proves." Okay, so now let's look at why Asa did not remove the Yahweh altars from the high places. Benson suggests that perhaps Asa thought that it was okay, they were still lawful. David and Solomon had used them, why can't I? You'd have to be pretty ignorant of the law, but I guess that's possible for a king to be ignorant of the law. Another reason why Asa did not remove the Yahweh altars could be that it was difficult and dangerous to attempt to remove them because the people had such a high opinion of those altars. Or perhaps, as Benson says, Asa was thinking that illegal Yahweh worship was better than no Yahweh worship at all. Asa perhaps could have been afraid people would not go to Jerusalem to do proper worship because it was too much trouble. Well, for whatever reason, he left the high places up. Now in verse 15, Asa is said to bring into the temple of the Lord the silver and gold and the articles that he and his father had dedicated. Well, let's look at two issues here. What had Asa's father Abijah dedicated? And the second thing we'll look at is what had Asa dedicated apart from Abijam, his father? Starting with Father Abijam. Abijam, if you will recall, had gotten involved in a huge war with Jeroboam of the northern kingdom and had beaten him badly. And so we can assume that there was a lot of spoil that was gained from that victory. And perhaps Abijam had dedicated that spoil to the temple, but he hadn't carried it out his vows to give it to the temple yet. And so then Asa is going ahead and saying, okay, here's my father's stuff. He never gave it to the temple. I'm giving it to the temple now. Now, this assumes that the idolater Abijam had some love for Yahweh and Yahweh's temple. And that's true. We know that because of 2 Chronicles 13:10. But as for us, Yahweh is our God. This is Abijam making his impassioned speech to Jeroboam right before he beats Jeroboam in battle. Abijam says, but as for us, Yahweh is our God. We have not abandoned him. The priests ministering to the Lord are descendants of Aaron, and the Levites serve at their task. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown agrees with the idea that it's the treasure that's being dedicated here by Asa was probably the spoils which Abijam had taken from the vanquished army of Jeroboam. So I think that's reasonable. So that's what Abijam had dedicated. Now, what had Asa, as opposed to Abijam, his father, what had Asa dedicated? Well, he had a big battle with the Ethiopians, the Cushites, right south of Egypt. And there was a lot of plunder taken. That would be silver, gold, vessels of various sorts. Let's read that in 2 Chronicles 14:13-14. And Asa and the people who were with him pursued them, the Ethiopians, as far as Gerar. Gerar is somewhere around present-day Gaza, between Gaza and Beersheba. The Ethiopians had apparently come up through Egypt and gone into the Gaza area, and Asa had gone down there to fight the Ethiopians. Chapter 14, verse 13 says, so many Ethiopians fell that they could not recover, for they were shattered before the Lord and before his army. And they, that's Asa and his army, carried away much plunder, and they destroyed all the cities around Gerar, for the dread of the Lord had fallen on them. And they despoiled all the cities, for there was much plunder in them. Okay, so Asa had a lot of money. He put it into the temple treasury. Adam Clark says, on what account Asa and his father dedicated the things of value, we know not, but it appears that Asa thought himself bound by the vow of his father. Probably so. At any rate, he puts a lot of money in the temple treasury. And later on, we're going to see he's going to take some of that money and get himself involved in an unfortunate alliance with Ben-Hadad of Syria. We go down to 1 Kings 15:16-17. There was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, throughout their reigns. Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah to prevent anyone from leaving or entering the territory of Asa, king of Judah. Now, there's a chronological problem when we compare the parallel passage in Chronicles that we need to look at first. 2 Chronicles 15:19 says that there was no more war until the 35th year of Asa's reign. Well, if Asa's at peace all the way until the 35th year of his reign, the 35th year of Asa's reign is 865, and so there was peace all the way to 865, and then war broke out. But the problem is Baasha is dead in 886 B.C. That's the 24th year of his reign. That's when he died, and so there's a problem. Well, there's been several ways to reconcile it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. Gill and Clark say you should reckon those 30 5 years from the beginning of the reign of Asa, not from that beginning of the reign of Asa, but from the time of separation of the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. That would be 931. Ellicott, Barnes, and the pulpit commentators say that there's a manuscript error in the numbers, and there's another fancy way to reconcile it offered by Poole and Colin Delitch. I'm not going to get into that because it's too complicated. We just need to briefly remember that the first 10 years of Asa were at peace, and those that would go from 911 to 901, and that means the first 7 years of Baasha were at peace from 909 to 901. So they started out at peace with one another, and then they started fighting. And so the war begins at verse 17 when Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and fortified Ramah. Now, Ramah is a city in the tribe of Benjamin. As reference.com says, it's a town of ancient Palestine on the border between Judah and Israel. Ramah is the traditional burial place of Rachel. The Ramah in the Gospel of St. Matthew is possibly the Ramah of Samuel. This is Samuel's old stomping grounds. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Ramah stood on an eminence overhanging a narrow ravine which separated Israel from Judah, and therefore Baasha took up a hostile position in that place. So if we look at the map here, Ramah is at the very northern edge of the southern kingdom of Judah, and of course it's just a few miles, say 5 miles south of Bethel, which is at the southern end of the northern kingdom of Israel. And so Baasha goes down and goes to the border city of Ramah. He fortifies it, which means that he makes military preparations so that nobody can enter into Judah if they're coming down from Israel. Now, why would they be doing that? Well, to worship at the temple in Jerusalem. And that's what Baasha does not want, because his religion is the golden calf religion. He wants his people to worship that religion to give him political integrity in the northern kingdom. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that that is why Baasha fortified Ramah, and I think he's exactly right. We go down to 1 Kings 15, verses 18 and 19. Asa then took all the silver and gold that was left in the treasuries of the Lord's temple and of his own palace. He entrusted it to his officials and sent them to Ben-Hadad, son of Tabrimam, the son of Hezion, the king of Aram, who was ruling in Damascus. Aram is Syria. "Let there be a treaty between me and you," he said, "as there was between my father and your father. See, I am sending you a gift of silver and gold. Now break your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so he will withdraw from me." Now we're going to see that Asa did a good thing politically. He relieved the siege or the blockade of Judah that was put in place by Baasha at Ramah. So that's the good thing he did. But the bad thing he did was he raided the treasury of the Lord's temple. And we're going to see he's rebuked by a prophet for doing that. First of all, we need to look at where did the treasure come from that was in the treasury of the Lord's temple. We ask that question because we know that under Rehoboam, Asa's granddad, Shishak, Pharaoh of Egypt, had raided Israel and stolen the golden articles out of the temple and the palace. We read that in 1 Kings 14:26. He, that Shishak, seized the treasuries of the Lord's temple and the treasuries of the royal palace. He took everything. He took all the gold shields that Solomon had made. So now there is an issue. Well, if Shishak took everything, what was there for Asa to pay Ben-Hadad of Syria with? Well, if you recall when I was talking about verse 15, we said that Abijam, Asa's father, had taken a lot of plunder from Jeroboam in his famous battle with Jeroboam. And we also saw that Asa himself had clobbered the Ethiopians and taken much plunder. So that's where the money came from. Abijam, Asa's father, and Asa's treasurer himself, they had put money in the temple treasury and devoted it to the Lord. But now the money is being taken out to basically bribe Ben-Hadad of Syria. Now, money in the temple treasury was not supposed to be taken out and put to profane use, is what Adam Clark says. Quote, "It was more so sinful to make use of it to bribe a heathen." In other words, it's bad enough to take it out, but then you bribe a heathen with it to break that heathen's covenant and alliance with another. Ben-Hadad was allied with Baasha, of the northern kingdom. To do that is more sinful. It betrayed a great distrust of the Lord and of the Lord's power to help Asa, which was the more aggravated when he had had such a wonderful appearance of God for him against the Ethiopians, where Asa had beaten the Ethiopians and taken much plunder from them. God had done wonderful things for Asa. Now here he is not trusting in God. Jameson Fawcett Brown says of this, quote, "There was no reason why Asa should have emptied his treasures at this time to procure the aid of the Syrian king, as it does not appear that there was any danger which he himself could not have turned aside. He probably wished to destroy the kingdom of Israel, and to effect this purpose even robbed the house of the Lord." In other words, Jameson Fawcett Brown says that Asa was too aggressive. He should have just fought Baasha at Ramah and beaten him there instead of trying to completely destroy the kingdom of Israel. I don't agree with that. I think that it actually makes sense to encircle your enemy, to catch him in the rear, which is exactly what he did. I'm thinking that maybe he should have used different money, if he had it, to encircle Baasha from the rear. I don't know what his options were, but we'll see later that he did not do right because God chastised him for doing that. Now we have some Syrian names here. Ben-Hadad, son of Tabrimon, T-A-B-R-I-M-N-O-N, who is the son of Hezion. So I'm going to go through this real quickly. There is some dispute over whether Hezion is the same name as Rezon, and whether Hezion, also known as Rezon, is the same person as Tabrimon. And just to summarize all that mess, because it really doesn't matter that much, here is the most probable succession for the kings of Syria, as I can determine it, around this time of Jeroboam and Baasha in the north, and Rehoboam, Abijam, and Asa in the south. We got Hadadezer. He's overthrown by a rebel named Rezon. Rezon's son Hezion takes over, and then Hezion's son Tabrimon takes over. And then Tabrimon's son Ben-Hadad takes over, and that's who Asa makes the deal with. Now, should he have done this? Well, a prophet rebuked Asa for this. We read about this in 2 Chronicles 16, 7 through 10. "At that time, Hanani the seer came to King Asa of Judah and said to him, 'Because you depended on the king of Aram, and have not depended on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Were not the Cushites and Libyans a vast army with many chariots and horsemen? When you depended on Yahweh, he handed them over to you. For the eyes of Yahweh roam throughout the earth to show himself strong for those whose hearts are completely his. You have been foolish in this matter. Therefore you will have wars from now on.' Asa was angry with the seer and put him in prison because of his anger over this. And Asa mistreated some of the people at that time." All right, Asa was a good king, but he got mad at a prophet of the Lord. He mistreated some of his people. His main problem is he didn't trust in the Lord. He didn't trust in the Lord to deliver him from the fortified town of Ramah, to deliver him from Baasha. And later on, we're going to see he did not trust God to heal him from his foot disease that he caught 2 or 3 years before he died. But at least he didn't commit adultery with somebody and murder her husband. We go down to 1 Kings 15:20. Ben-Hadad agreed with King Asa and sent the commanders of his forces against the towns of Israel. He, that's Ben-Hadad, conquered Ijon, Dan, Abelbeth, Makkah, and all Kinnereth, in addition to Naphtali. All right, Naphtali is the northernmost tribe of Israel, or one of the two northernmost tribes of Israel. Asher is the northernmost tribe on the coast, the Mediterranean coast. You move inland about halfway to the Sea of Galilee and Lake Hula. That's Naphtali, and all these northern towns up here, right at the southern border of present-day Lebanon, we can see these towns. I've got a map. Ijon is a little bit north of Abelbeth Makkah, which is a little bit north, a little bit west of Dan, the ancient city of Dan, which many people say is the same city as the ancient Laish. So the geography is not a problem. Kinnereth is mentioned. Kinnereth means harp, and all I could find from Easton's is that it's a fenced city in Naphtali. Of course, Lake Kinnereth was the old name for the Sea of Galilee, but that's a little bit to the south. So at any rate, Ben-Hadad comes and puts heat on Baasha. Baasha's all the way at the southern end of his kingdom at Ramah, And now cities are being taken from him at the northern end of his kingdom by Ben-Hadad. So what? He has no choice. We go down to verse 15, 21, and 24 and see what he did. Verse 21, when Baasha heard this, he stopped building Ramah and withdrew to Tirzah. Now, Tirzah is to the north of Shechem, about 6-7 miles. And, of course, Shechem is north of Bethel, and Bethel is north of Ramah. So, in other words, Baasha heads north. Tirzah, of course, was the capital city of that Jeroboam and Nadab had used as their capital. Verse 22, 1 Kings 15. Then King Asa issued an order to all Judah. No one was exempt, and they carried away from Ramah the stones and timber Baasha had been using there. With them, King Asa built up Geba and Benjamin, and also Mizpah. As for all the other events of Asa's reign, all his achievements, all he did, and the cities he built, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Judah? In his old age, however, his feet became diseased. Then Asa rested with his fathers and was buried with them in the city of his father David. And Jehoshaphat, his son, succeeded him as king. Now no one was exempt from this order to build. They tore down the fortifications at Ramah, because Ramah had been deserted by Baasha. And then they built up another city called Geba. If you will look at the map, Ramah is about a mile or so to the west of Geba. I don't know why Asa decided to fortify Geba instead of just taking Ramah and keep the fortifications in place. I don't know if anybody knows that, but Geba is real close to Ramah. And Asa also built Mizpah. Now, Mizpah is just to the north of Ramah, and perhaps that explains it. Now, you got Ramah, the old fortified place of Baasha, is now surrounded. Mizpah to the north, a little bit to the northwest, and Geba to the east. And so if Baasha ever comes down again, Asa can take care of him. Now this Geba, which was fortified, we might remember that. That's the place where Jonathan slaughtered the Philistines in one of his battles fighting for Saul against the Philistines. No one was exempt in this fortification. The state was in danger. All exemptions necessarily ceased. Now Mizpah, the city that was reinforced just north of Ramah, that's sort of a famous city. There's lots of Mizpahs, but this Mizpah of Benjamin here is famous. The people met there in great national emergencies. It was some 4 miles northwest of Jerusalem, so it helps protect the capital city of Jerusalem, just as Geba does. It was situated on the loftiest hill in the neighborhood, some 600 feet above the plain of Gibeon. Samuel inaugurated the Reformation at Mizpah that characterized his time by convening a great assembly of all Israel at Mizpah, now the political religious center of the nation. There, in deep humiliation on account of their sins, they renewed their vows and entered again into covenant with the God of their fathers. It was a period of great religious awakening and of revived national life. The Philistines heard of this assembly and came up against Israel. The Hebrews charged the Philistine host with great fury, and they were totally routed. Samuel commemorated this signal victory by erecting a memorial stone, which he called Ebenezer, which means has some meaning of help in it. Ebenezer, saying, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." Now, all of this is in 1 Samuel 7. We went over that when we covered that in an earlier podcast. But since there's that famous hymn, "Here I Raise My Ebenezer," and nobody knows what Ebenezer, it's a memorial stone that means God is my help, because Samuel won the battle at Mizpah. So Mizpah has great historical connotations as well as a good military situation, a good militarily geographical good situation. Now we're going to close out Asa's reign with the disease in his feet. The parallel passage in Chronicles is a little bit more detailed, so we'll read that. 2 Chronicles 16, verses 12 through 13. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa developed a disease in his feet, and his disease became increasingly severe. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but only the physicians. I said it was 2 years before his death. Clark says it's 3 years. Again, when you're handling years, you get within 1 or 2 years, that's close enough. So 2 or 3 years before he died, Asa's got this big problem, and he does not turn to God, just like he didn't turn to God when he had the problem with Baasha at Ramah. Application point there is fine. You get sick, and all you think about is what the doctors are going to do to heal you. Listen, medical science is still in the dark ages. I know it's made great strides since even 50 years ago, even since 10 years ago, but still, compared to all the sicknesses of the human body, medical science is in the dark ages. So you better pretend to depend on God when you get sick and you're in a hospital, and you could get MRSA. The doctor could screw up. A hospital is a great place to die, a great place to get sick. You better depend on God as well as the physicians. I mean, of course, God uses means. He uses the physicians, but God is in charge of all the means. Asa did not do that. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished with the story of Asa. That prepares us for our next audio, which is still in chapter 15 of 1 Kings, verses 15 through 34, and we will look at Baasha overthrowing Nadab in the north. A little flashback that backs us up a little bit chronologically, but we'll head back up to the northern kingdom and take care of the short-lived dynasty of Jeroboam. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.